All right, it is July 13th, 3:23 in the afternoon, and we have President Legislator Myers, myself as Chair, Alfreda Williams, and Legislator Burton here, and we're going to formally open the meeting. Ms. Brathwaite, would you come forth and have a seat up here if you're able with your...
You want her closer to us, so
you don't
in case you want us to pass the salt.
It's not like, and your colleagues.
Well, they can come take care.
Yes, please.
There's no reason to be that formal.
Well, that's fine. I'm accustomed when I come sitting down at the table. I would not be so presumptuous as to sit here.
We ask you to come to provide us with an overview of the commission and the work that it's doing, and I guess we should start off with a brief description of how the commission functions, the commission itself, and we know what the duties and responsibilities are, but let's talk about how the commission is made up and go on from there.
Okay. Well, it's nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation to come and speak about the commission. We're always delighted to talk about it. With me today is my deputy, Jurice. Why do I feel like I'm sitting in a hole?
Because they've been chair
safe. Oh, okay. Okay. And Jurice Duquette-Epps, and you also probably remember Josh Levin, who is the director of housing for the commission. The commission is, you know, there are now 8 of us in total, including the office of EEO, which joined the commission last year. And we continue to have a significant number of cases coming in for prosecution. As you know, under the human rights law, we have 2 mandates, and one is prosecution of claims of discrimination, and the second is to do outreach and education into the community. And so we have been trying to operate under those 2 mandates, as we have. This, of course, is our 10th anniversary, and we're excited about it being 10 years old and what have you, and looking forward to celebrating in December the 10 years.
Was that when it is?
Well, no, it was in March, and we had a small celebration, but Human Rights Day is in December, so we're going to celebrate it in December.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds true.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to doing that. The cases, the majority of our cases, 70% of the cases that come in are employment-related, followed by probably public accommodation and education cases. The basis upon which most of these claims, a lot, I would say, we have found disability claims are the ones that are on the rise and have been rising more and more.
Which ones?
Disability.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Although we get claims across the entire gamut, age discrimination, gender discrimination, all of it. You know, I don't think there's any area that we have not seen come in any area, in both non-housing as well as housing cases. And the process, of course, is that we do the intake and, of course, make sure that there are claims of discrimination. If it is not a claim of discrimination, then, you know, we don't have a finding of probable cause. We do an investigation. We want to make sure that people, you know, that just because they come in, we don't just decide that this is a case of discrimination. We do a complete, thorough investigation to make sure that we understand what the issues are, what the claim is, and whether or not we can help them. If it's not a claim of discrimination, we certainly try to direct them to another resource that we feel might be able to assist them in any way possible. But if it is a claim of discrimination, again, as I said, we embark upon a thorough investigation of the claim. And we have our 2 investigators, Margie Perez, who works with Jurice in the non-housing arena, and Marilyn Henry, who is the investigator in housing. And we have bifurcated the 2, as you know, because the housing started to grow, and housing discrimination started to grow, and of course we became partners with HUD. So HUD wanted specific devotion and dedication to housing discrimination. And so Josh and Marilyn focus primarily on housing discrimination claims. And so we will do a complete investigation. If we can resolve it in-house, which we really do try to do because it saves money, and most of the majority of the cases we are able to resolve in-house. The nice thing about it is that the three of us are lawyers, so we are good at negotiating and what have you, so we'll be able to settle the claims, you know, quickly. Under our law, we have 180 days to make a determination, and we try to stick within that. And thank you very much. You expanded that, so we now have a little bit more leeway, you know, a little more wiggle room in which to work. So we are able to make that determination and try to settle. If it doesn't settle with us, then we can call in an independent or mediator to try to help resolve it. Sometimes the people would rather have somebody that's outside and an independent mediator, and we certainly have a panel of mediators that we can call upon. They are not paid. They do it pro bono. We're paying their expenses, you know, for parking, what have you. Have not any money to give them anything, but that's okay. They're still doing it because they believe in the cause. So the mediators, you know, are still working with us, and we're very pleased about that. If it doesn't get resolved through the process of mediation, then it goes to a formal public hearing. And the formal public hearing is conducted by an independent administrative law judge. The administrative law judges are under contract with the county. Generally speaking, we have in the past selected them and brought them in. And the county does a contract for them, and then we have them rotate on various cases. We've had two who were specifically assigned for housing because of the very specific and particular items that come up in housing. We really wanted, you know, at least two administrative law judges to become totally familiar with housing and all of it, because many of the cases, actually almost all of the cases, I would say 90% of the cases, are dual filed with HUD. And so, so they are protected not just under our law, but under HUD's law as well. So because of that, we try to make sure that the focus is directed and that people are skilled and knowledgeable entirely with respect to housing. That's the procedural aspect of it, and I think we have certainly in the past 10 years we're very happy. We've garnered over $1 million in monetary settlements for the complainants and an enormous amount of equitable relief, because everything is not done in terms of monetary damages and what have you. I think we've had just one where we've had to assess penalties and fines. We've had three or four cases in which they are pattern and practice. And if you recall, maybe Judy and Billy might recall, when we expanded it so that we were able to do monetary damages for pattern and practice cases, because before it was just a slap on the wrist and cease and desist, and so the law expanded so that we were able to do that. So, you know, that's been a plus for us as well. But we've been able to, I mean, you have sometimes people, and this was borne out just yesterday, the lady, you know, who was really very badly treated in the store, and, you know, she said, you know, we did the investigation, and of course the people said they didn't realize, you know, that she had been offended by what had taken place. And she just wanted an apology. She said, I don't want any money. I want them to apologize to me. I want them to openly apologize. And, you know, do you want maybe some kind of compensation of any kind? She said, I want them to apologize. That's what I want. I want an apology. And that's what it meant to her, to have the store apologize to her for the way they treated her. So I think she settled for the fact that they will make she's a Hispanic woman, and that they're going to make a donation to a Hispanic cause. So a donation of food, because it's a restaurant, deli. So she was happy about that. She said, I don't want money. I'm not looking for money. I want them to realize how they treated me and to apologize and openly say that.
And she didn't need to spend any money to come to you.
No, not a dime.
So she did not need, I mean, that's something that, as you all know, we've heard a lot in terms of other trees we've been barking up. Mm-hmm. But the idea that, to use the Human Rights Commission, you know, it's going to get expensive.
Well, it's usually the defendants who are raising that issue. did the defendant have to?
Did they have to hire an attorney?
Did they have to provide anybody to represent themselves?
No, and I'm sure that most of the respondents have attorneys, and it depends. You know, if we're able to sit down with them, which we do initially try to do, to say, look, let's come to the table. Here are what the issues are. Sometimes they're very responsive, and they'll say, like this gentleman said, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't know that we had been so offensive to her, didn't know it, didn't understand it. And then you'll have some that will just absolutely say, we're not, you know, that's not it. You know, then, you know, they will have their attorney. But most of the companies already have an attorney. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
All these companies and corporate offices and businesses already have attorneys that they've retained to represent them. So it's not like they have to go out now and hunt for an attorney. That doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. There's already somebody there that they can call up and say, look, I got this complaint from the Human Rights Commission, and I need to respond to it. They respond to it, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not... it's not like you're engaging in any extenuating costs.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the commission itself. I know I read the legislation, so I know that you're supposed to have 15 members.
The board, I have a 15-member board. The board members are selected, appointed, by the county exec, and approved by the Board of Legislators. And we have 15 members. I think we may have one vacancy at this point. I think we have...
Did we just put
somebody? Jerry Rudiman.
Yeah.
Yes, Gerald Rudiman. But I think we still have one vacancy.
Oh, you do?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, because Dr. Batty resigned because of work.
Hey there.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Hey. We've been joined.
Hi, how are you?
By Legislator Jenkins, who is our chair. Is the board made up according to the legislation? The board is supposed to be reflective of the population of the county. Is that the case?
Yes, at the present time it really is. It's, many of the members, we still have some of the members on that board that have been there since day one, since they were part of the first members of the commission board. And it is very diverse. We have male, female, black, white, Hispanic. I don't think, no, there's nobody Asian, mm-hmm. but Dr. Batty was Indian, but he just resigned. So we do have a very diverse commission board.
Any questions or comments?
If I can engage in a little bit more extended discussion about the potential for having to hire an attorney upon a complaint that gets beyond your decision making, that in fact there is some matter that has to be settled. We discussed, Ken, before you came in, the facts that upon occasion when a complaint is filed against a corporation or a business, that often enough they are represented by counsel, although usually, as the lawyer said, they are already have the attorneys on some sort of retainer.
Mm-hmm.
The objection that was raised against the source of income law as was passed by this board was that the fear that a complaint lodged with you folks would engender substantial attorney's fees and would conceivably even rise to the level of having to take out anti-discrimination insurance to protect on the downside of the astronomical $100,000 fine that was potentially there. Much of that seemed to be, shall we say, overdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, do any of, or how many of the cases that are brought under the anti-discrimination statutes are in effect today, how often do you find that in fact they do bring an attorney whether they really need it or not?
Respondents are generally always represented by counsel, as I said, because they're the ones with the money. It's the complainants that are there without representation. The respondents all generally always have I would say 90% of the time the respondents are represented by counsel.
So this is in the anti-discrimination world.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true also of the housing world?
By and large, yes. Josh, do you have many that are not represented by counsel in terms of landlords or what have you? Because generally speaking, it's, if a case is brought, it's generally brought against the co-op board or the condo board and what have you, and they have an attorney that's generally sitting on that board, you know, so unless it mushrooms into a major case or hearing, or in generally speaking, they their insurance carrier provides the attorney, and unless, you know, I think we have one situation where they were not happy with the attorney that the insurance company provided, and so the condo board hired its own outside attorney. But that's their decision. That has nothing to do with
us. And what insurance are we talking about that you're paying for the attorneys?
Well, I guess so whatever insurance the landlords or the condo has in terms of...
But you don't know that it's insurance-based. It's just that they have one and it shows up and they're paying for it.
Yeah.
For the attorney. Mm-hmm. So it could very well be that they have somebody on retainer for $20,000 a year to handle writing the contracts as well
generally
as representing.
Absolutely, and sitting on the board.
Yeah, yeah. Usually the condo boards mm-hmm. have the directors and officers mm-hmm. insurance.
Well, I'm trying to, I guess, tease out this objection
yeah.
that a lot of
yeah.
the landlords say that we're going to have to
yes.
get an attorney as though
as
it's an
they've never
situation.
Ever thought of that.
Right. Right. Never even occurred to them before.
Mm-hmm.
And
gee, where would we find one?
Where
right.
We well, I mean, I try to bring this down to the lowest possible level here. The one of the reasons we wrote the Mrs. Murphy exception into the source of income law was to deal with the potential that a mom-and-pop landlord owns one building, lives in it, owns another one that they don't live in, and that's the extent of it, might be sufficiently hammered by the expense of, since they don't have one, on staff, as mm-hmm. it were, having to go out with all the attendant anxieties and come up with an attorney. So I think that was one of the reasons, I think it's fair to say, mm-hmm. Chairman, mm-hmm. That we chose to do that. But beyond that, we figured they'll either have one or they'll know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm trying to see it from their side of this, that it's either a normal course of business, no matter what you are. If you're just a mom and pop deli and somebody files a complaint that you've discriminated against them in some form or another, is the example that you gave, mm-hmm. you said the deli owner came in with a lawyer. So that if that's the normal course of business, then the landlord advocacy groups are just living in a dream world where they think that nobody ever has lawyers, and in point of fact, everybody brings in a lawyer.
Well, you look at it from the perspective that whether you have a mom-and-pop deli or whether you have a small building that you manage, if somebody fell in your building or slipped and fell in your restaurant or your store, you'd have to find an attorney, to handle that particular situation, and there would be absolutely no shortage of time or attorney to do it. So for them to act as though, this is now going to create a major undertaking for them does not make sense. Does not make sense.
And that also then goes to the matter of insurance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That you mm-hmm. can take out discrimination insurance mm-hmm. if you want to, just as you take out slip and fall insurance.
Mm-hmm.
That was simply a cost of doing business.
Well, I don't know if it's called discrimination, but you have your yeah. officers and directors.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Liability.
Directors and office liability insurance.
Yeah. Well, but wasn't there...
You wouldn't have discrimination insurance.
Did Young Finger sit over here and rant at us about...
He ranted.
About discrimination insurance, that there was a...
Yes.
You couldn't find a policy or it cost a fortune?
Well, I think it doesn't exist.
Well, I don't know. If it turns out that such policies don't exist, then that's something else. And you would then file that under officers and directors, mm-hmm. Whatever the...
I think they would cover it.
But if that's the case, I'm trying to tease this out because
yeah.
I'm looking... I'm trying to move forward on the Section 8 question and the source of income issues for my committee, and I'm trying to get a sense of this, and this has been very helpful, and I appreciate mm-hmm. it.
Can you keep going on that angle?
I think I've run out of gas.
Well, I'll I'll pump some here. Do you get, now you said 70% of your cases are employment related,
mm-hmm.
and the rest are public accommodation and discrimination.
That's on non-housing.
So in the housing area,
yeah.
do you see a lot of the, do you get Section 8 now even though we don't have a source of income law?
We have had numerous, you know, calls and requests, yes, that have come in.
And what do you say?
That we don't protect it. It's not protected under our law.
Wow.
We have to say, I'm sorry, you know, there's nothing we can do. It's not, you know, anything that we protect under our law.
Wow.
And so there's some place you refer them to, or just...
Where are they going to go?
New York City.
There's no place, but they don't live in New York City, so that's a jurisdictional issue, so they can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's an issue in Westchester County, they have nowhere to go at the present time. And if the state does pass it, we'll have to say, you know, truck down to the Bronx, Fordham, or up to Peekskill.
In order to deal with the state Human mm-hmm. Rights Commission,
right.
yeah. yeah. The other question
and
I
if
have...
You ha- and if, in, and if it's if they have two issues that overlap, Legislator Myers would understand, like, for instance, let's just say they have a claim of domestic violence, source of income,
yes.
Discrimination.
Yes.
The state doesn't cover domestic violence.
But we do. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they now are going to have to say, well, okay, part of this is source of income discrimination, part of this is domestic violence, and, you know, so now we have no place to go where we're going to have this issue taken care of. Because if we go to the state,
yeah.
I lose my domestic violence
right.
claim. If I go to Westchester County, I lose my source of income claim.
Do you ever get the feeling that landlords are savvy about this?
In terms of what?
Knowing that they can discriminate.
Of course they can. Landlords know when they're
Well, it's the same thing that exists in the real estate market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
You had also talked about, and I remember when this came up with, you know, I guess it was 2 years ago, with the whole funding thing and with HUD and adopting some of the same rules.
Our substantial equivalency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Since doing that, so now there is much more a closer relationship between HUD and
well, we're a complete partner.
Yeah.
We're a complete partner, and the cases are dual filed, you know, with Westchester County and with HUD.
Is there any... And has there been any interaction or, I mean, obviously we've been subject to a large lawsuit with regard to housing, affordable housing, fair and affordable housing discrimination,
mm-hmm.
And HUD is involved there. Has there been, since that all came to be last year, has there been any work with the Human Rights Commission, with the administration, either last year or this year, with using any of the knowledge and the relationships with HUD in order to
or working with
guidance
the,
or, gee, how are we doing?
Have we been working with them on the housing settlement?
Yeah, well, not even on the settlement, but, I mean, there's so many overlaps here. It just almost seems like, gee, I wonder if they could be through you. Could we be your client and sort of work with HUD?
Have they used you as an intermediary?
Yeah, or even as a resource, because
yeah.
you know you guys are working with them, so you know them so well, and you know what's...
No, but, you know, we're working with HUD solely on housing discrimination, and I think you have to make sure that there is an understanding and a bifurcation, and there's a big difference between affordable housing and fair housing. Okay, so we're on the side here of affirmatively.
That's not what we got in trouble for. We're saying there was a big bifurcation.
Fair housing, and so we're dealing solely with housing discrimination. Okay, we're on the. I went and tried to get a house, and it didn't work. So
right.
we're on that side. They're over here on trying to deal with getting affordable housing.
Except that I think, at least my understanding of the settlement and the stipulation and every all of the stuff that went into it was that really, in reality, what it came down to was that we were bifurcating it too much.
Mm-hmm.
We were saying, oh, no, our problem is lack of affordability.
Mm-hmm.
It's not,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not worrying about the fair part, mm-hmm. and that basically HUD said no.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've not been involved. I think we went to one meeting subsequent, it was a couple of months ago? couple of months ago, we were asked to come to, Josh and I were asked to come to a meeting, but that had to do with the AIs, and to see if we could give some assistance in terms of information, in terms of, what was it, Yonkers? And then, yeah, with Yonkers and then the county. So we provided whatever information we had for them to do the AIs.
So it is
where I'm going, obviously, right. I mean, we still don't have anything approved here. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly there is some help needed. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me we've got, it would be legitimate to use our own Human Rights Commission to help ourselves in providing the information that is required.
Or in helping to shape
to shape
the AI, because that was actually part of the question.
Yeah.
We asked them, they were here yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and we asked them who they reached out to, mm-hmm. in helping to prepare the analysis of impediment document,
mm-hmm.
and the implementation plan. They had not met with the developers, you know, mm-hmm. As a whole. I mean, mm-hmm. they met with individual people, but to say, hey, you know, when you do the county center meeting, when you talk about the education component for human rights,
mm-hmm.
and you have a community meeting, mm-hmm. and you say, you know, come in and we could talk to you about human rights in Westchester County and fair housing in mm-hmm. Westchester County. They haven't done that, and that was
we provided them. And Josh, please correct me if I leave out mm-hmm. something, and you two, Jerise, mm-hmm. because the three of us all worked on it because we got in a FOIL request. Jerise is our FOIL officer, so she was working on, and we had gotten the FOIL, I think that came in from Yonkers. Was that Yonkers?
The first request was from Yonkers. Yes.
But then we had gotten the request for them to, because I let them know about the FOIL request, and we gave them that we were providing this information in terms of housing. So we provided that information and gave them a copy of what we were going to be providing under the FOIL. In addition to that, we subsequently were asked to give a whole analysis of the county, of all discrimination cases that we had throughout mm-hmm. the county, which we did. We, you know, put all of that information together. In addition to that, all of the education and outreach initiatives that the commission has been involved in terms of housing, we provided all of that information. So we you know, gave them a whole bundle of information.
Gave to who? To the FOIL requesters?
No, they went to Mary Mann.
Oh, okay. So mm-hmm. they do have that information.
Yeah,
they
got two. They got one based upon the FOIL request and then one that they wanted for the AI.
Mm-hmm. But one legislative Mars point that they haven't actively engaged either the Human Rights Commission as a whole or the members of the commission themselves to meet with them and say, okay, what are the framework of issues that have come across the desk from Human Rights Commission perspective, and whether from the commission members or from the office itself, they did not ask that.
No.
Right, and we were talking through that. We talked about it yesterday. Well, they had time to try to do something going forward as far as the framework.
The last thing. Was that when Sue Gary was here, she had asked me to put together some information as she was putting together some documentation, I guess, for response to the monitor, which mm-hmm. I did, but that was the only thing. I've had very limited involvement.
They mentioned yesterday as well that they hired a consultant from Marietta, Georgia, to do some outreach and
To prepare the AI.
And to prepare the AI, and I wondered if there had been any exchange between you and that consultant. Mm-hmm.
Two or three of our outreach initiatives. we were putting on a fair housing program, and it was on the list of things that we've done and two were going to be done, and he introduced himself to us at the, where were we, in Yonkers?
That one was in Mount Vernon.
Mount Vernon, okay. And that was the first meeting with him.
Okay. So, but that was it. It was your. It was a workshop you were doing.
And
he was an attendee, right?
Yeah. He hasn't come to the department in question.
Well, actually, his was the second floor request.
His was the second floor.
He submitted the second floor request.
Oh, okay.
We responded to him. We responded to him, and then.
Well, I don't know. He came to the first meeting. I mean, to our first workshop.
We employ him.
Well, I think, I don't know, he was a consultant, so he came to our program, and then before the next program, he sent the FOIL request.
And he did the FOIL request so that he says this is what he did, right? So he's documenting his set of work, right? So that's
what he can charge you for it.
Well, he has a contract, and in the contract, I mean, we requested yesterday a copy of the contract. From the administration, because the board hasn't been engaged as it needed to be. So we know there's a lot of people that haven't been engaged. So while it's semi-troubling to hear that the Human Rights Commission, and specifically the Fair Housing Office that is HUD certified, hasn't gotten engaged, at least in trying to shape the framework or helping to shape the framework for either the AI or the implementation plan to the depth that we would hope. We're working through it, and we're hopeful now that there's been enlightenment that there. Okay, all right, we're on the record.
Right. Your fever.
Madam Chair,
I'm going to shift a little bit now. You indicated that you have administrative law judges. If the mediation is not successful, people can move forward to the next level, which is the administrative law judges.
That's right.
How many, and do they specialize in specific areas? I would assume that these are mostly attorneys?
They're attorneys. Under our law, they have to be attorneys licensed by the state of New York.
And what portion of the law is that, Madam Chair?
That is in 700.
Oh, nine
is part of that, but there's where it tells us that they have to be. It's 709
R. That says the quality.
709 R.
Do you, Madam Chair, and the members of that, the ALJs, are appointed in what section of 700? Is it 708?
No, 709 R. Says to designate qualified persons to serve as administrative law judge. Preside at hearings conducted pursuant to provisions of this chapter, with the commission designate only persons found qualified by the commission by reason of experience and education, including but not limited to experience and education as an attorney. Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, so
they don't have to be a lawyer.
That's what this says.
Right. So, Madam
Chair, I think that's true of a lot of judges.
Now, it does say somewhere else. Oh, where they say. The preference is that they be an attorney.
But Madam Chair, just on that, on section R, and I'm not sure why, which we have to check and find out why our sections are different. But so on section R, what it says is that the commission designates it.
It's under section R is part of the powers and duties of the commission.
Mm-hmm. No. It's just but whatever. One line is just a little different, so we'll have to get them caught up, right? So, Madam Chair, which one? All right, we'll go through it real quick. Madam Chair, through you to the commissioner. On Human Rights Commission designate the persons to serve as ALJs, and with the commission, and you designate those persons found qualified by the commission. By reason of education and experience, and then you would send that to the administration to have those people certified. You all pick those people. That's
yeah,
it.
That's
right?
It. We select them.
You select them.
We select them. The board, the commission board, approves.
Right.
And then we send the names and information to the law department to request that they draw up the contract because they are paid.
And for the current year, for the people, because I'm sure that their terms expire at a certain time, for the current people, are they all up to date right now? Are all your ALJs filled at this point in time?
No.
Yeah.
Can you send to us, to Madam Chair, the names of the people that you have submitted to, submitted and have been approved by the board? Because, I mean, obviously your commission approved these individuals, right?
But their contracts were not renewed.
But, okay, that's fine. But we want you to send to the board of legislators those people that you all, at the commission level, approved. And then we can follow up, Madam Chair, to determine what the status is, because those by contract should be executed, right?
Yes,
it's the charter. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
So we can get that officially through you all, because the commission and the date that they were approved, I guess, at the board level, at the commission level, because you said that you would recommend them to your commission, and then the members of the commission board voted for those individuals. Mm-hmm. Is that the process?
Right, but their contracts are renewed every year, and they've been serving for the past 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
5 to 7
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this, I'm sorry.
So the contracts are renewed on an annual basis?
Mm-hmm.
Does your board take action to authorize you all to renew them, or are they automatically renewed?
No, once they've been approved and they've been submitting their, you know, decisions, and we've not had any problems or issues with them, you know. Mm-hmm. I just, when their time is up, we just, you know, or a couple of months before their time is up, we send up the contract for them to be.
But
currently, you've got some that have not been approved. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. They're not, and they can't serve as ALJs because they don't have a contract, so they're no longer there.
So how many are left?
We don't have any.
Okay. So right now the status is that your ALJs that were sent for renewal. Because in the law, I'm not sure. In the law, does it serve you? Do they have a term in the law?
No.
So they don't.
No, there's no term limit in the. You mean in the human rights law?
Right.
Term limit in the human rights law.
Right. So when you all appointed them, they went through the process. What we're going to need, in addition to that, Madam Chair, through you, and they could hopefully send it to you, is the minutes of the meeting where they were initially authorized, right?
Okay.
Right, so that you would have that the commission board duly authorized these individuals, and now they're up for renewal. One might ask on a reappointment, though, that you might have some process to say that they're being renewed as opposed to just automatically. There might be a question.
Well, it sounds as though they have the commission appoints Bill Burton to serve as an ALJ, unlimited in term, but paid on an annual basis, a contract of which is drawn up.
Right.
And it then gets funded. If the funding doesn't show up after all of that, then what's the point? So you've got a series of people who have been appointed by the commission to serve in this role, but the funding is not there.
No, the funding
is not
no,
signed.
We provide the funding, right? So the funding would be.
There are presently two individuals who were sent to us to serve as ALJs. And both contracts have gone out for them to sign, but only one has so far returned it. And then there was an issue with his contract, so we have to send it back.
Well, just from a process perspective, Matt, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Were sent to you? I thought the commission initiated the ALJ.
By the law.
Well, but they, under the new administration, they have sent us two additional.
Are they referred people? The administration referred people to you for?
The new administration indicated that they had two people who should serve as administrative law judges.
Well,
two new people.
Well, that's a good question on that point. How many? There's not a number of ALJs that could be under contract to be able to serve. You could have 100 ALJs to serve. You all would determine who would get those who would be assigned those particular cases, whether by round robin or some other methodology.
Yes, what we do is, you know, we rotate.
But which of these individuals were? But these individuals were not submitted to. These individuals were not submitted to the board, the commission, for approval.
Yeah, the two new ones that were sent. I interviewed them. Jerise and I interviewed them, and then we submitted their names to the board.
So the board approved.
The board approved them or interviewed them and approved them. I sent the two contracts up for signature. Only one came back so far, and but in the meantime, we don't have any.
Okay, and in addition to that, besides the fact from a process perspective, can you send us the copy of that those minutes as well? Because from a process perspective, Madam Chair, that's completely inconsistent with the law.
Well, the thing is that, you know, like, there are no minutes. The board did not meet during a regular board meeting. The board met separately, interviewed them. I can give you the dates and who was present at that time to meet with them. They have another meeting scheduled to meet with the two others next week.
Two more ALJs?
Mm-hmm.
And these were people that came from the board or people that were...
Madam Chair,
how did you find these people?
Their names were sent to me by the...
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm just, as a suggestion, as a member of the committee, is that we would have the administration to come to our next meeting and to have them review the process, because clearly the charter provisions for this particular... these particular appointments are not being followed.
Exactly.
There's certainly nothing wrong with any member through the board of legislators or through the administration or anything like that submitting names for consideration for a position should they come up. There's certainly nothing wrong with that particular thing. Certainly names could come up through the commission members themselves. But to send people over to be duly authorized with the that they is just inconsistent with the law. So there would be some significant concerns with that particular.
Well, these were the names that they said they recommended. They recommended,
but the law specifically designates
the commission,
to recommend people and to designate people. It does not address the administration in any way. As far as it relates to administrative law judges.
No, the administration is as a matter of fact, the administration, is the one that recommends the names.
Right.
Like the county executive will recommend the names of people to serve on the commission and approval from the board.
Right.
That's where the level of thing is.
Right.
I mean,
the
county executive recommends members to serve on the commission board.
Well, correct. I mean, and with his...
But it is the responsibility of the commission board.
To find the ALJs.
Yes.
Right, yeah, it's completely inconsistent.
Actually, that's the same way it works with the... I'm on the Board of Health.
And taxi limousine commission.
Administrative law.
Well, I appreciate your presence.
Well, I very much appreciate the whole idea that we've got to this commission here. And you're going to send to Mrs. Dodge the analysis of the state legislation.
We have minutes.
Oh, I would so move.
I need a second.
Yes, Judy said yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
No,
thank you.
Okay.
Nice to see you guys.
Always nice to see you.
Look forward to getting that analysis tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Very good to demand that they have that point in the process.
Legislator Williams asked a question, and I know it's been about the cases.
Why did they have to do real estate?
No.
I'm looking at
700.09. But I'm looking for something totally different.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. No, I know where it is. But this is, what we have is the brand new copy, so we don't know where anything is. This is hot off the press, both sides, and encompasses everything. See, with the old one, I had everything marked. I knew where it was, so I know what I'm looking for.
She got a great job.
Okay.
She always
This is on.
Yeah, that one's there. But that's not the one that it has to
I mean, the concern from the concern at this point in time, Madam Chair, for you all is that there is a law, it should be executed a certain way, and since you all are involved on some of the things as far as that going back and forth, legislative minds was privy to the email exchange between myself and the Chief of Staff for the County Executive as they were talking about appointments that were done in an inappropriate way, or they thought were being done or were done in an inappropriate way. And which was not the facts, right? But he went on and on about how he thought that it should have been done and executed a specific way. We certainly will have an issue with the law not being followed a specific way. Again, there is absolutely, positively nothing wrong with people, the administration, us, or anyone else, sending in names to you as executive director for presentation at your commission.
We can work with anybody as long as they are qualified.
We send that name to you and they're up for consideration because obviously it's not there's not an unlimited source of funds to support the individuals that are doing that and quite honestly you might not have a set of cases to support 100 ALJs to do that. I mean, we hope that that's
well, they only get paid if they work.
That's right.
They only get paid if they work. So, they don't work, they don't get paid.
The concern for us is that there is
Have you needed one and haven't had one, or you luckily nothing? I guess you said that nothing has so far lately hasn't gone. Everything's been mediated.
I would assume that there have been some occasions.
Of course, it seems that there needs to be that. And the issue at this point in time is that in order for the Human Rights Commission to execute its job. And its function, that's it by the charter, this is the things that's necessary, and by doing anything different, you're hamstringing the commission from being able to execute its charter responsibility. And we would, again, we are going to express a concern from the board that the charter is not being executed and followed based on whatever section number it is. We're going to have to find out which section number it is, right? If it's 709 or 8, I mean, I'm looking online. Yeah, exactly. Or they might have fixed the number already, right?
Maybe that was it, right?
Right. So to deal with that, but
can I ask one last question? Mm-hmm. That's just it's always been a curiosity, and I mean, I could have emailed it, but it's sort of top of mind now because we're in this whole process, and I sit on a special housing group and within the Board of Legislators. Do you hear
she's got the new one too. I'm
without
sorry.
Giving away any obviously confidentialities, but I guess I could approach the question in two ways. One, do you ever see cases similar to what was part of the whole anti-discrimination case against Westchester County? Or the other way to pose it would be, was this a surprise to you at all, knowing Westchester County and the way this whole housing settlement went? There were lots of people in Westchester who were going, oh my God, I never had a clue about any of this stuff. But based on some of the things that have come before the Human Rights Commission, do you as a group sense that there is this, I mean, we all hear anecdotally about different things, but do you as a group that actually has people coming to them with issues sense that this is a problem?
Housing discrimination is not new to the county of Westchester. It's not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been going on since I was a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you from a personal standpoint, I remember people sitting in my mother's living room talking about issues of fair housing way back when I was just a teenager, which probably is one of the reasons why I'm involved in doing what I'm doing. But so housing discrimination is not new. It's not new to this county. It's not new to this region. It's not new to the United States. It's been going on. Do we see it? We saw it before we even got involved in separating and becoming a partner with HUD. We had people coming in. That was one of the reasons why, as a commission, we recognized that we needed to separate the issue of housing discrimination from non-housing discrimination.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Basically because of requirements procedurally as well as legally. And how you handle a housing discrimination case is different from a non-housing case or an employment case or a public accommodation. And when we became a partner with HUD, there was clearly procedural requirements that would not mesh together. So that was one of the reasons for the bifurcation. I think since we have been doing the housing, we have seen a significant number of housing discrimination cases. We are at this point in, what's our year to date for 2010? I can tell you, year to date now for housing, I'm in the midst of doing my annual report, which I'm still late doing, but it's coming. For 2009, we had 113, and we are now...
And how did that compare to other years?
Well, don't forget, we didn't start till 2008.
Oh, of course.
So
got it,
so
got it.
We started 2008 from what...
it was only mid-year.
Was, yeah,
yeah,
what I was going to say, we got certified in June. We started actually working in June, so it was actually probably August. Between August and December of 2008, we had 55 cases that came in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then in the year of 2009, 113 came in. And year-to-date, Josh, do you have year-to-date?
Year-to-date, 2010. I think right now we're about 120.
And those are people...
Year-to-date, 6 months.
The 6 months. Mm-hmm.
It's increasing exponentially.
Yeah. But the issue, the complaints that are being filed, that doesn't mean whether or not they are cases that you can actually handle or not. Those are just actual raw complaints, or those are
Those are raw complaints that are going to be investigated. And
so if somebody came into with a complaint that you could not handle, so for example, if it was a source of income type complaint, does that count in that number that you're counting?
Counts only in the PIR number, not in the
what's
complaint.
PIR?
Our preliminary inquiry, you know, an inquiry.
So we count out of the 120.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do your numbers have those PIRs?
Yeah, do you have some PIRs in that? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. But, again, if you have something, and sometimes they have more than, you know, they could have three things, okay?
It could be
gender, it
mm-hmm.
could be source of income, mm-hmm. and it could be race,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be
sexual
domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and some of the areas, you know, you have to recognize, like, HUD doesn't cover sexual orientation, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're working on it. They're trying to catch up with where we are.
Mm-hmm.
The Nassau County, what are they working on? They have source of income.
Yeah, source of income since 2006.
Yeah, they have source of income, but
it's not unconstitutional in Nassau County.
No.
just saying.
Josh, what is Nassau County? Oh, I know. No. Nassau County protects the source of income, but they're now trying to do what we did and become partners with HUD. So they're asking our assistance on how do you get through this substantial equivalency.
Oh, yeah.
Muck and mire, you know, yeah. to get that. So they're that's where they are. So you can have some overlap, and then if you don't protect all of the categories, you got a problem. So
wow,
this was
quite
informative.
Yeah,
truly appreciate your coming.
Thank you, and Madam Chair. Just from a time and perspective, in a few days that we can gather that information, because we are certainly going to try to have a follow-up conversation.
Okay.
We have a meeting set with them Thursday with some levels of the administration.
Again,
on our leadership meeting that we will...
Again, as I said, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that there may be formal minutes with respect to the administrative law judges, probably a meeting date. For instance, they have a regular meeting is the first Wednesday, but it's at that meeting that they then establish a date that we're going to interview. So it's not part of the minutes. But I can give you the date of meetings or whatever have you.
And just the names of the contracts that were sent that were held up. That we the other the
you mean of the ones that were here before that they
were submitted by the commission that were
mm-hmm.
that were
That were not approved.
That are
approved.
Well, they're in limbo. Let's not say that they're not approved because they could.
They're in a deep dark hole.
So, exactly. They may be on the
desk. They got lost.
This happens. You know, that happens all the time.
They're
somewhere.
And for those particular individuals, by the way, also if they were in the middle of working on something, because what you just suggested was that if they were in the middle of a case.
No, we wouldn't do that.
If their contract ended, I'm asking real question. If their contract ended on March 1st, right, and they were in the middle of deliberation, and you said they only work if they get paid in this particular thing.
We would have a problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, but so none of your folks were in that
no,
limbo?
No, okay. they were not in that area.
Thank you.
A member of the audience here, would you want to make a comment?
No, it's just very informative. I learned a lot,
Do you want to identify yourself or?
My name is Diane Anderson.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I thought you looked so familiar. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Who led a terrific... You had a big hand in putting that together at the Wayside Cottage with those two? Well, the woman especially.
Yeah, the women, we all...
They gave an amazing presentation. What was the name of the group, that woman who leads that group? Not the nutritionists, the other people.
That was about domestic violence. Mm-hmm. That's part of, like my sister's place attached to that. And, the woman gave a just phenomenal...
The woman who'd been to jail.
In-your-face delivery.
Yeah.
About, they're trying to get a bill on the table for the victims who, unfortunately, are on the other side offensive. Crime is committed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So.
Yes.
It was very informative. I learned a lot, about the human rights piece of it. And because you hear a lot of things, there's a lot of speculation, and people don't know where to go.
So
it was very, very informative.
It's true.
Thank you for coming. And thank you.
It was Andrew Stewart Cousins who started the Human Rights Commission. Yeah.
Thank
you. When she was accountable.
We have pending referrals here that we can...
You want to receive and file, right?
Yes, all of them.
This is so mad. I'm
going
to go to Human Rights Commission. My county executive. I think we'd have a case.
Yes. I think
so. What each one that you're referring?
The two childcare ones, 11 and 12.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, daycare subsidies?
Yes.
Why are you filing this? We
haven't resolved that.
Yeah.
Well, we're receiving and filing so that we can, maybe you can bring them up next time. We do have Mr. Bemis or whoever it is.
Bemis.
Coming on the 27th.
Good.
So we can ask for an update because the idea...
What are you going to do about the fatality? Do you want to do all the fatality reviews? Oh,
yeah,
good.
We're going to do a meeting.
It's a real...
Madam Chair, you wouldn't want to receive and follow us until after we finish whatever action that we may or may not be doing on that.
Okay. All right, so we'll hold down 11 and 12.
That is still open.
It's still open.
Yes, that's an item that's still open.
What about tanning beds?
Oh, yeah, I think we can
receive
that one.
That one might be
a letter. That one.
That was just a letter.
Yeah, that's just going to legislation.
About the status of the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I move that we receive and file that one.
Second.
Okay. Yep.
And are you doing something with childhood obesity?
Yeah.
I thought, you could receive and follow.
That's communication, too. And if we ever need any more there's so much information with the health department on that and all of the different groups.
We used to. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We still do.
Yes.
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah, Olivia.
Second. I'm nodding. Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Motion to adjourn, Madam Chair.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
You know where there's beefy people.